Introduction. Do you want to run faster? Then you need to slow down. As contradictory as it may seem, the secret to becoming a speedier runner is going slow most of the time. The key difference between runners who realize their full potential and those who fall short is the amount of slow running that each group does. Recent analyses of the world's best runners, the first studies to rigorously assess how these athletes really train, have revealed that they spend about 4/5 of their total training time below the ventilatory threshold, or running slow enough to carry on a conversation. New research also suggests that non-elite runners in the recreationally competitive category improve most rapidly when they take it easy in training more often than not. The vast majority of runners, however, seldom train at a truly comfortable intensity. Instead, they push themselves a little day after day, often without realizing it. If the typical elite runner does 4 easy runs for every hard run, the average recreationally competitive runner, and odds are you're one of them, does just 1 easy run for every hard run. Simply put, running too hard too often is the single most common and detrimental mistake in the sport. As mistakes go, this one is pretty understandable. Going fast in training makes intuitive sense to most runners. After all, the purpose of training is to prepare for races, and the purpose of racing is to see how fast you can reach the finish line. Nobody denies that running fast in training is important. But as I will show you in this book, runners who strictly limit their faster running in workouts derive more benefit from these sessions and perform better in races, whereas those who go overboard end up training in a state of constant fatigue that limits their progress. I myself learned this lesson the hard way. I started running a few weeks before my 12th birthday. My first run was a 6-miler on dirt roads surrounding my family's home in rural New Hampshire. I wore a stopwatch and pushed to get a good time, ideally something relatively close to my dad's usual time for the same route. 2 days later, I repeated the workout, aiming to improve my performance, which I was able to do. 2 days later, I took another crack at lowering my mark and succeeded again. Young and naive as I was, I expected this pattern of steady gains to continue indefinitely. After a few weeks, though, I was no longer improving. I was also feeling lousy on all of my runs, and the joy had gone out of them. Eventually, I quit training and turned my athletic focus back to soccer. A couple of years later, I blew out a knee on the soccer field. After recovering from surgery, I decided to start running again. As chance would have it, one of the coaches at my high school was Jeff Johnson, a brilliant mentor of young runners who had the distinction of being Nike's first employee and the man who named the company. Jeff's coaching philosophy was heavily influenced by that of Arthur Lydiard, a New Zealander who had revolutionized the sport in 1960 with a method that featured lots of slow, comfortable running, and modest amounts of speed work. I thrived on this approach, becoming an all-state performer in cross-country and track, and leading my team to a handful of state championship titles. The secret of slow running is not new. Every winner of a major international competition since the Lydiard Revolution of the 1960s owes his or her success to slow running. Despite this fact, only a small fraction of runners today recognizes and exploits the power of slow running. The failure of the mostly slow method to reach all corners of the sport has several causes, one of which is, or was, scientific skepticism. While many scientists still believe that slow running is rather useless, there is a revolution happening in the study of the optimal training intensity distribution in running, and the new advocates of slow running are looking like winners. Previously, scientists who dismissed slow running as junk miles seemed to have the weight of evidence on their side. Then along came Stephen Saylor, an American exercise physiologist based in Norway, whose intuition told him that the training methods used by the most successful athletes were probably a better representation of what really works than were the limited lab experiments that appeared to suggest that the world's greatest long-distance racers had no idea what they were doing. This intuition led Saylor to embark on a research agenda that culminated in the most significant breakthrough in running since Arthur Lydiard's original discovery of slow running, the 80-20 rule. Sailor started by exhaustively analyzing the training methods of world-class rowers and cross-country skiers. He found a remarkable consistency. Athletes in both sports did approximately 80% of their training sessions at low intensity and 20% at high intensity. In subsequent research, Sailor learned that elite cyclists, swimmers, triathletes, rowers, and, yes, runners, did the same thing. Knowing this pattern could not possibly be an arbitrary coincidence, Sailor and other researchers designed studies where athletes were placed on either an 80-20 training regimen or a regimen with more hard training and less easy training. In every case, the results have been the same. 80-20 training yields drastically better results than more intense training. The 80-20 rule promises to revolutionize running and other endurance sports in a couple of ways. First, it ends the debate over whether a mostly slow approach or a speed-based approach to training is more effective. No longer will scientists and coaches with a bias for high intensity or even moderate intensity be able to steer runners in the wrong direction. Second, by supplying clear numerical targets, Sailor's discovery makes effective training easier, even for runners who are already training more or less the right way. The 80-20 rule removes the guesswork from the training process. Reaping its benefits is a simple matter of planning your workouts in accordance with the rule and monitoring your running intensity during each workout to ensure you're where you're supposed to be. Sailor's rule also helps runners by explicitly defining low intensity. The boundary between low intensity and moderate intensity, according to Sailor, falls at the ventilatory threshold, which is the intensity level at which the breathing rate abruptly deepens. This threshold is slightly below the more familiar lactate threshold, which you can think of as the highest running intensity at which you can talk comfortably. In well-trained runners, the ventilatory threshold typically falls between 77% and 79% of maximum heart rate. In pace terms, if your 10K race time is 50 minutes, 8 minutes and 3 seconds per mile, your ventilatory threshold will likely correspond to a pace of 8 minutes and 40 seconds per mile. If your 10K time is 40 minutes, 6 minutes and 26 seconds per mile, you'll probably hit your ventilatory threshold at approximately 7 minutes and 2 seconds per mile. In either case, running at or below these threshold speeds will feel quite comfortable. Scientists have determined that the average recreationally competitive runner spends less than 50% of his or her total training time at low intensity. This is a problem because research has also determined that even a 65-35 intensity breakdown yields worse race results than does full compliance with the 80-20 rule. The good news is that, unless you are an elite runner, it is almost certain that you are doing less than 80% of your training at low intensity and that you can improve significantly by slowing down. The purpose of this book is to help you do just that. When Jeff Johnson showed me the power of slow running during my high school years, I never would have guessed that I would one day coach runners myself. My role is not to innovate and discover like Arthur Lydiard and Stephen Sailor, but to serve as a link between the innovators and discoverers and the broader running community. Earlier in my career, I was struck by some of the new ways that elite runners were using cross-training to elevate their performance and avoid injuries. So I wrote Runner's World Guide to Cross-Training. Later, I developed an interest in how brain science was influencing the sport at the highest level. So I made these new methods available to all in Brain Training for Runners. When I learned about Stephen Sailor's work, I was experienced enough to know immediately that the 80-20 rule was a game changer. Even though I had always taught a mostly slow training approach, I was aware that many of my runners ran too hard, too often anyway. What I've realized, and what science proves, is that running slow just doesn't come naturally to most runners. The same instinct that I had as an 11-year-old new runner exists also within countless other runners of all experience levels. It's an impulse to make every run count by pushing beyond the level of total comfort. This instinct makes a lot of runners rather hard to coach. It's one thing to give a runner a training plan that is dominated by low-intensity workouts. It is quite another thing for that same runner to actually stay below the ventilatory threshold in all of those designated easy runs. I have discovered that unless a runner is systematically held back, he will more often than not run too hard on easy days and unwittingly sabotage his training plan. Until I found the work of Stephen Saylor, my efforts to keep runners from making the most common mistake in the sport were ineffective. This quickly changed once I studied Saylor's published research, as well as that of other leading scientists of the 80-20 revolution. I also made direct contact with Saylor and his collaborators to learn more from them. I began to use the quantitative benchmarks of the 80-20 method to ensure that the training plans I created for runners were neither too hard nor too easy, and that workouts were executed correctly. I later designed a range of ready-made 80-20 training plans for the Pair mobile app, which uses my voice to guide runners through heart rate-based workouts, and developed a separate 80-20 running app that keeps track of time spent at low and moderate to high intensities. Not surprisingly, many runners have had to slow down to conform to my 80-20 guidelines. Some have done so reluctantly, finding it difficult to believe that going easier in training could make them go faster in races. But the runners who have taken a leap of faith and seen the process through have been well rewarded. Their runs have become more pleasant and less draining. They now carry less fatigue from one run to the next, and they perform and feel better in the few runs that are intended to be faster. Suddenly, it no longer seems impossible to run an extra 5 or 10 miles each week. The ones who take advantage of this opportunity improve even more. A typical case is Joe from San Diego. An experienced runner and triathlete, Joe had been chasing a sub-3-hour marathon for nearly 20 years when I began to work with him. Previously, Joe had been self-coached, and like almost all self-coached runners, he did a lot more moderate-intensity training and a lot less low-intensity training than he thought he did. Getting him to slow down was a challenge. While Joe accepted the 80-20 philosophy and principle, out on the road he kept reverting to old habits. At last, with the help of the Pair mobile app, I got Joe to slow down. When he did, his energy level skyrocketed, and we were able to put that energy to good use by adding a few extra miles to his training schedule. In May 2012, at the age of 47, Joe completed the Orange County Marathon in 2 hours, 59 minutes, and 20 seconds. Now it's your turn. The purpose of this book is to help you in the same way I have helped runners like Joe since I joined the 80-20 revolution. I will show you how to break the bad habit of running too hard too often and embrace slow running. I will also make the case for 80-20 running by exploring how this method evolved naturally over a period of many decades at the elite level of the sport, and analyzing the cutting-edge scientific proof that 80-20 running is more effective than other methods for runners of all experience and ability levels. I will explain how 80-20 running maximizes both fitness and running skill. In chapters 6 through 13, I will tell you everything you need to know to practice 80-20 running most effectively. I am confident that the educational first part of this book will leave you eager to begin using the practical guidelines of the second half. After all, how often do you get to hear that the easier way is the better way?